Hey everyone, good morning and welcome to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and of course I'm the host of Geek News Central, Saturday Morning Tech. I do the Chrome Show from time to time. Of course, we've got Geek News Central. We've got all the great shows like Robot Underpants and The Gadget Professor. So we definitely want you to come over to GNC and check us out. We're not talking about the healthcare folks that sell vitamins. So make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. And I got two great guests today. And one is brand new. I'm going to let you introduce yourself to everybody, because probably everyone's going, who in the heck's on the top screen? Mike, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I'm Mike Chaffee. I've done a few podcasts in my time. I work with Adam Carolla, helped him set up that podcast network, really, as well as doing some digital media stuff for Jimmy Kimmel Live, amongst others. I've also worked with Greg Fitzsimmons podcasting, come from a radio background. And very much into the podcasting world, as it were.
Did I get it right that is your website, personal website, lowbudgetfm.com?
Lowbudgetfm.com. Yeah, that's a personal podcast. We haven't had a new episode in a little while, unfortunately, just due to schedules. But it's a very silly comedy podcast me and a buddy of mine, Mark Chambers, have been doing for a few years now.
Very cool. I know, of course, everybody knows Rob Greenlee on the bottom, and Rob thought I should have Mike on the show. We're going to probably talk a little bit about what Mike's doing. He's doing some really cool things in space. But Rob, good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. It's great to be back.
Yeah.
It's been a few weeks.
Yeah, I've been stuck in Texas. I feel like I'm, becoming a Longhorn or something like that, living there. But I'm definitely racking up the hotel points with my stay there. So it's been got one more trip and I'm done, I think. So it's Texas kind of fun, man. It's a rednecky type of state, but it's also Austin is just absolutely fantastic. From it's just got lots of music and lots of stuff to do, and then Dallas has a life of its own. I'm not a huge fan of Houston. I don't think I'd ever want to live there, but I live in Austin. It's a fun town.
So. The weird thing about Austin is that it sort of feels like Berkeley, California. Like it's that liberal and that young and that much fun in the middle of a state known for being, as red and conservative and sort of Southern as could be. So Austin feels like they stole something from somewhere else and planted it right in the middle of Texas. I love Austin.
And I believe me, I'm a not. Some folks that live in Texas may have taken some of my initial comments that saying, "Well, what do you mean, rednecky?" It's not. It's just everyone there's nice and country. And I grew up in Southern Michigan, and I guess I consider myself from the country. I lived on a dirt road, so I guess that kind of qualifies. But that was many, many moons ago. But the food's good. The people are good. It's just a whole, I don't know what the vibe is there, but it's just, it's like, you know that if you need some help, someone's going to stop and help you. it's one of those types of things. And it's just an interesting state, but I do like Texas a lot. So, here and there, I'm back here in Honolulu and want to take just a moment here and want to thank our sponsor for the show so that we can get some bills paid and keep these lights on, because my electricity continues to go up here in Honolulu in a big way. 32 cents or 36 cents a kilowatt, just absolutely.
That's crazy.
It's killing me. And what are you paying, like 8 cents or something like that, Rob?
Actually, about seven, a little over 7 cents.
So just take your
kilowatt. It's not fair.
Just take your electricity bill, multiply it by five, and then you know my pain.
Yeah.
So
it's painful.
Oh my God, it's painful. But I go around the house and the kids leave a light on, and it's like, when my dad was growing up, when I was growing up, my dad would turn the lights off. I'm like, turn the lights off in a big way. Hey, but we want to thank the folks over. Well, that's a lower third. I want to thank the folks over at GoToMeeting for being a sponsor here. This is a tool by Citrix that I use. Gosh, I'm in it every day. Being in Honolulu, it's like you're not in the center of the universe. You're not in New York. You're not in LA. You're not in San Francisco. So, you know, my meetings are largely with folks in those cities and, you know, some of the bigger metropolitan areas. And the meetings are really an essential way that I work, and I have to do a lot of presentations and pitches, and I can't always get on an airplane and go somewhere. So if you're, you know, if you're having a meeting with someone, or you have a team member in a different state or different location, or just, you know, maybe even telecommuting, you know, this is a way where you can work together and work collaborative. So I think I like the GoToMeeting with HG Faces the best. I was telling the guys the other night on the show, guys, that I was in this meeting, and it was had been kind of going on a while. And we were like three quarters of the way through, and I could see, you know, in the webcam, one guy kind of stretching, and you know, his nose was, you know, starting to do the touch and go. And I say, hey guys, why don't we take a break and everybody get a cup of coffee? And they kind of like take a break during a online meeting. And I'm like, yeah. So, you know, they kind of didn't register, but you know, I could see I was losing people. So it really it worked out good, and everybody come back and we finished up, and we actually closed a deal. But you know, no matter where you're located, GoToMeeting allows you really to share the same screen, making it easier for everyone to be on the same page. And with the built-in HD video conferencing, you know, you can prevent those people from going to sleep that you're talking to, or you can up your game if you need to. And what I like best too is you can present now with your iPad. So that's really slick. So again, I want you all to try GoToMeeting for free. And for this free 30-day offer, all you got to do is go over to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. Again, all you got to do is go over to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. GoToMeeting, meeting is believing. Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks for that, and thanks for GoToMeeting for being a sponsor here. Mike, I think what I want to do is I just want to, you know, kind of talk about your background a little bit. I know you're producing for Adam Carolla's show and some other big names. And you know, how did you, and or working on the digital side more, you said, how did you get connected with Adam and the other superstars that you're working with?
Well, it all started, my background's in radio. So I was the associate producer of the Adam Carolla morning show, the morning show that replaced Howard Stern on the West Coast. And during my time there at that radio show, podcasting or on-demand audio, and it wasn't really called podcasting the entire time I was there, and certainly the website, all these digital efforts were super important to the company and to the show. And so little by little, I wasn't ever like the webmaster, but I was very much a digital liaison to the various digital departments from the Adam Carolla show, as well as producing the show at the time, or associate producing. So anyways, when CBS decided that talk format wasn't going to work, Adam very quickly talked to me about starting the podcast on with him. And that turned into obviously a very successful venture. But as I was doing that, just random comedians would often reach out and say, hey, that what you're doing over there is really cool. And can I start my own podcast? And can you help me do that? And for a long time, I would help anyone I could, whether it was like a Greg Fitzsimmons or a few other comedians or even comedy clubs. It was kind of silly the amount of work I was doing there. But I just really dug into the podcast world and tried to absorb as much and learn as much. Certainly, I learned a lot in a very short amount of time. And little by little, I met other people and also got into my day job over at Jimmy Kimmel Live. But yeah, that's the very short story of how I got into podcasting and a very weak link into how I got into Jimmy Kimmel Live. But yeah, I think I've focused on podcasting for a long time.
You know, Rob and I have talked here in recent months about, you know, the comedy space is just, especially in the new media side and the podcasting side, it's just absolutely on fire. And, yep. You know, it's you've got all these large personalities and, you know, so I'm on the business side of this, you know, in my day job, trying to figure out how to, you know, to put cash in Adam's pockets by finding sponsors and other folks. And man, I'm going to tell you, whenever you try to pitch a comedy show to an advertiser, you know, immediately their nose wrinkles up and it just drives me crazy because, these comedians have these super engaged, super hyper fans that are, they're like, they don't miss a show. And
that's so true. That's so true. Yeah.
And it just kills me. But on the other hand, I've also done some deals with some comedians, and their execution on their ads has something to be desired. They have a hard time switching from their shtick, I guess, to a more business.
The segue is not smooth for a lot of those guys. I mean, something I'll defend Adam, and I think it's easy for anyone to see that Adam's live reads are still in his voice. He's still very funny, and he still delivers good messaging points for somebody like a GoToMeeting or Citrix or whoever the sponsor would be for that show. He's, besides being funny, he also has exactly what you were saying, not just a fan base that listens to all his shows very consistently, but they listen to what he's saying. And if he's saying something funny about a sponsor that he believes in, we see a very high conversion rate. I think higher than a lot of other shows would see for those sponsors. And we were able to activate for them in a way that is kind of surprising. And you're right, a lot of clients or ad agencies are worried about a comedian stepping on or being too funny about something that they're obviously very sensitive about. But the proof's in the pudding when you see Adam getting people to click on whatever it is they're supposed to click on.
Where there's where Adam does a great job, you know, then there's the other side of the spectrum when you have, you know, comedians that are not as quote unquote polished and, yeah, you know, and understand that if they don't do a good job, there's employees may not get paid this next week.
Right.
And I don't know. Rob, you and I have talked about this quite a bit, and I think it's just the comedy, you know, it's again, it's that coming from the shtick out of the routine and out of the discussion into doing a spot. And it's kind of awkward. And, you know, my show, this is there's nothing awkward about it. My tech show, I can go right into an ad spot. It's like, I don't really have to change gears at all. Where those guys, and I don't envy them because they have to kind of change a little bit. We've talked about this before. Have you had any evolving ideas over the past months?
Well, I just think that really it's a skill that they haven't developed yet, because it's really, I think the key to an effective ad like that would be keeping that consistent voice, but making a slight tweak, just like you said, Todd, to make it a little bit more, you know, tone it down just one notch and deliver the message in the context of something funny, just like what Mike said. I think that's the key. And if you're a comedian listening to this, go listen to what Adam does,
right?
And take notes. I did a fantastic job of kind of like putting on a different hat, but keeping his personal brand intact. And that's what's going to keep that listener listening too. I mean, if you change too much, or if you turn off your advertiser, I think it's bad. I think it's a tweak is what we're talking about here.
You know, and Mike, you've worked with some, obviously some big names in the space, very recognizable and national brands. Jimmy Kimmel's his own brand, by himself. How do these guys feel about the, I know what Adam's thoughts are, but how do these guys feel about the new media space? How is it? Is it just another distribution point for them, and it's still the goal is, their live TV spots? Is that where do they put priority in their online space?
It's hard to answer for all of them in one fell swoop. It changes between all of them. As you know Adam's viewpoint, which is Adam sees this as being his platform. He no longer needs to answer to CBS to put out his radio show. Yeah. He's now got it in his own format, and he's able to distribute it even better than the radio people like CBS were able to. But then when you look at someone like, obviously Jimmy Kimmel is a huge brand, and that's, you have to consider what ABC and a bunch of other people think. But maybe a better example is another comedian of that ilk, of like an Adam Carolla, like, again, Greg Fitzsimmons. He has his podcast, Fitzdog Radio. And it makes a decent amount of money, but it beyond just being another production, another radio show that he likes doing, I think, and making a decent amount of money, not a huge amount, but a decent amount of money with advertising, it grows his brand more so. And it's very important for a guy like him to grow his brand and to market his shows, his books. It's indirect revenue in that he's able to sell more books, sell more tickets to his shows, try to beef up his Twitter and Facebook. Like I say, it's hard to answer for everyone. Obviously, Adam considers it a business. I think people like Greg might consider it a marketing tool. And I think there's a lot of room in between those two things, business and marketing tool, that everyone falls in between at some point. While trying to do both, I think.
Yeah, one thing I see on my side is, there's still obviously three distinct categories of folks that are doing this. There's the guys like Adam that are very serious and have a business, and it's taken and used, and it's obviously the content is number one, but still the business behind the content is equally important. And then you've got the guys that are, working a day job, and then they're coming home and doing a show, and they want to make some money, and they do that. And then there's the pure hobbyists that don't care about the cash. All they care about is the content. And I think there's, obviously there's room for all three of those categories of people in the space, and we need them, because never know where the next Adam Carolla is going to come from. Because of a couple of business deals we've done with Adam, I've been able to see his numbers, and he runs right up there. Well, there's a number of shows that do extremely high reaches. In other words, they reach several hundred thousand people every episode. But those numbers of shows that have that kind of reach are, a very small percentage, maybe less than 10%. And, my question is, what's it going to take? Let's say that there's 100 shows, and maybe a little bit of a liberal number. Let's say 50 shows that are doing over 200,000, audience members per episode, and that might probably be about right. So the question is, how do we get that number higher? You look at what YouTube has just done. YouTube had 100 shows. They spent $100 million on. They're going to cut 60% of them, which kind of is following the TV model. It's the TV does a pilot, and 6 out of the 10 get cut, 4 get kept, and then they're going back for another round. YouTube's got the billions in the bank with a B to be able to bankroll new talent. So how do we in this space, without the B in the bank, the big billion in the bank, how do we get more Adams on the street out of guys that are new and upcoming and are having a hard time breaking out? I think, there's a lot of great talent. I mean, hugely great talent that's out there. And yet, you would think that they would have fantastic numbers, and you talk to them, and privately they're discouraged because, there's only 2,000-3,000 people listening to their shows where their content is, deserving of a bigger audience.
What? Todd, I think that there's a couple things going on in that. I think that the opportunity is really linked up with how big that we grow the total audience for podcast consumption. I think it's been fairly static here over the last few years as far as the total numbers of people that are actually listening to podcasts. So somehow there needs to be an effort to grow that base and to also make it easier for people to get access to the content, though I would say it's probably easier now to get access to podcast content than it probably has ever been. So I think we're not necessarily sitting in a bad position to grow those numbers, but it feels like we're kind of like just at the cusp of maybe something that will grow it bigger, and I'm not quite sure what that is right now. And then the other side of the coin is that I think the podcast area is very niche and will continue to be that way. And that will basically make it more difficult for any one podcaster to grow to a size like Adam. And I think that's a big challenge. But clearly the industry needs more Adams and even like a Howard Stern to basically drive that larger audience to follow a podcast that can then be spread out across, you know, the 30 or 40 or 50,000 podcasts that are out there today.
You know, and I'll let Mike chime in on this, but, you know, what I see and my side is that luckily at this point, you don't have to have a audience of Adam's size to survive and make a pretty doggone good living.
That's true.
You know, if you just do the math and take, you know, let's say, you know, 1,000 listeners and you multiply that by a base advertising rate of, you know, $15 to $25. And you figure for every 1,000 listeners, that's, you know, that could be potentially $25 in your pocket with, you know, maybe three spots on a show. So, you know, you just, you do the math and it's not hard to figure out where it replaces your day job and you can do it full time and focus. So, and you know, the story that I always love to tell, and it's still true. I know a guy that is, does a show and he has a very, very big job. He has his job that he has pays him significant amounts of money. And yet his little hobby, his little hobby podcast brings in more money than his job does. And he's always said to me, don't ever, ever, ever tell anyone the type of money I'm making, because if I do, I'll get fired from my job because they'll, you know.
Because, such a horrible problem to have, Todd.
You know, and for that guy, it's a good thing. But you know, that isn't always the case. But, you know, there's a guy that likes to do his job and he continues to, you know, he rakes in a check every month. So it is kind of funny how it all works out. But, you know, Mike, where do you think we're at in the space? And Rob's comment is that the audience level has leveled out. And I don't necessarily see that. You know, we see a trend. As a matter of fact, Rob, if you haven't seen our new stats interface, it is incredible. Angelo has, we spent about 3 months completely revamping, and some things I asked him for were like global trending, and I want to see, you know, on a comparison by show basis, where the growth rate is. And we're going to release some new numbers here in the next couple of weeks. And I'm just going to say that the growth rate's been faster than I thought it has been. I think the audience numbers are increasing at a faster rate now than they ever have. There was a little bit of a plateau for about a year, year and a half, 2 years, but it's been a steady increase. If we continue on those rates, it could be, you know, a couple of years, we could be seeing, you know, doubling of the total folks listening to shows. You know, what are you guys seeing, Mike, on your side?
Before I get to the sort of bigger things like Adam and talking about the growth there, I'll speak to your point about the hobbyist running a show, which is like my show, Low Budget FM. We haven't done an episode very recently, but we have, our listenership is in the singles of thousands, not even the tens of thousands. And we managed to be in the black. We managed to make a few bucks as a hobby, something we just enjoy. And so just on that front, it's nice and refreshing and hopefully appealing to more people who can either supplement their income or one day replace their job doing something that hopefully they're very passionate about. So that's sort of a smaller scale thing, and hopefully more people get into it and more people see opportunities like that. But when it comes to the industry, podcast growth and where it's at, I see a little bit of both of what you guys are saying. I did see that plateau for a while amongst the various podcasts I work on. But I also have seen growth in small spurts, certainly consistent growth, though, over the about 4 years we've been doing the Adam Carolla podcast. We've seen pretty consistent growth, but I think we're coming up against what will eventually be the wall of people who are going to listen in the ways that we're listening today with our phones and tablets and computers. I think everyone watching this show and everyone on this show knows how to consume a podcast very easily, and that's not really a problem. And I think we're a lot of podcasters are still trying to teach people how to consume a podcast, and that eventually, you know, in the next year or two, that will be capped. I think everyone will know, or at least assume it's easy enough to get whatever thing that they want to, if they want to listen to this podcast or comedy or whatever they want, they'll be able to do that pretty easily on their various devices. I think the biggest jump is going to be, you know, set-top boxes as well as car radio. I mean, I know this is a video podcast, so this that's more for the set-top boxes. But I think once you get in car radios and get just embedded into more and more devices, you'll see, I think, two things. A, obviously a huge, huge audience increase, but then B, maybe some increased competition from the major networks or the major distributors like CBS, and you'll see them throwing more talent out there or working with talent who's already existing in that space saying, hey, you did a good job before. This is about to be much bigger. Let's work together on making this a great, successful business all around.
One thing that we've done is we were real early on the set-top box scene. As a matter of fact, we're probably still, from a distribution standpoint, probably out there pretty close being in front of most of the guys that are doing shows. You know, we had a Roku app when there was only 23 apps on the Roku device. You know, we were on Google TV, we're on Boxy, we're on Samsung Smart TV, and all the major devices were on with channels. And we've seen, you know, major growth on that over the past couple of years. And I think, you know, all total globally, probably we're maybe close to 10% of the content's being consumed on the, you know, on the set-top boxes. And it's great for video and not so great for audio. But, you know, what is really, you know, and I've talked about this many times, is everyone says, gotta have an app. And, you know, I think for shows like Adam's, you gotta have an app, you know, and it's just, it's important. But for the smaller shows, we just don't see people using their mobile devices with an app to listen to a show. And I want to show you kind of, we think why and where we've seen a big hit. And I demonstrate this all the time, on my show. Of course, let me load something that looks a little better here. I've got my iPad, loaded here. And since the update on the latest update to iOS 6, you know, just going into, and we'll focus in on my RSS feeds. You know, a lot of times people say, okay, I understand the iTunes logo. I get that, but I don't understand this little RSS thing. So either now, if you click on the iTunes logo or on the RSS feed, something in the iPad happens, or even in the iPhone happens. It's really cool. So let me click on the Chrome show, and all of a sudden, boom, Apple detects an enclosure in there and loads it up, loads a podcast app up and says, do you want to subscribe? And I say, yes, I want to. Actually, I clicked on the Gadget Professor. It says, do you want to subscribe? And well, I did. It was a Chrome show. And boom, I'm subscribed. Now, what we've seen since that introduction is an extraordinary number of new folks that are getting their podcast this way. And I think it's just this default behavior now that is really driving that. Now, they did have another issue. We were lucky. We were able to mitigate it. When iOS 6 was released, there was something in the code that was causing shows to be downloaded and re-downloaded and downloaded and re-downloaded. And there was a big, I know some major companies got hit with some major bandwidth bills, and it really really burned some dollars that they didn't have to because of this bug. Luckily, our CDN that we work with, we kind of figured it out to very, very quickly and was able to mitigate it and didn't have the issue. But others went nearly a month and burned cash. So when they released iOS 6.0.1, it supposedly has fixed it in the iTunes. I'm still hearing some folks in the space whine about it, but because not everyone updates their operating system at the same time. They did the big upgrade, but they haven't done the mini upgrade. So I think, you know, Apple's doing that has helped. But, you know, Rob, I hate to say it, but your boys over at Windows are not helping. They're not, they're not helping at all. You know,
what do you want them to do, Todd? Tell me right now.
I want to have the same functionality in Windows 8.
Oh, okay. That's not too much to ask.
Hey, Mike, podcasting's been around since 2004, right?
I'm sorry?
Podcasting's been around since 2004, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, Rob, why in the H-E-double-L has it taken Microsoft 8 years to do nothing? You know, I'm beating up on you unfairly. They had the Zune Marketplace, and
they still have it.
They still have it, but well, it's okay. Not on Windows 8, they don't.
No, well, technically, you can run the Zune software on Windows 8, but we don't have to go there too deeply.
Okay, so I've got this Windows 8 RT sitting in a bag back there. I'm trying to figure out how to get it injected into the show. There's no way at this point to easily subscribe to podcast on Windows 8. And
that I agree with. I mean, as far as in the kind of start screen, kind of Metro-ish type of environment, I would agree. It's not very friendly right now. You're exactly correct.
Does Microsoft understand they're losing market share right now to Apple, that Apple's starting to eat their lunch? You know, how hard is it over there to get, you know, some one little thing would really get them a lot of fans, you know, because what am I sitting, I've got a, what did this office used to have completely in it, Rob? You knew in the early days, it was a what house? It was a PC house, right?
It was a PC house, yes.
So now I have...
Politically correct, actually, right?
Now I have...
That's what you were trying to say. Right?
Now I have 1, 2, 3, 4 Macs, and I have one... And a TriCaster, I can't help it. That's PC-based. So I have one machine running an Adobe Edition. And the only reason it's still recording audio is because it's just the machine it's left over. I could be doing it with a Mac Mini. So 1, 2... Windows machines. So, you know, is that because Microsoft is not helping new media creators?
Todd, you're a traitor to the PC world. That's all I can say.
You know,
well,
so,
Todd, you're actually going to where you think you need to go. I mean, you're using the tools that that you're growing a fondness for to help you with your business, and I don't think anybody can blame you for making those choices.
No.
But I agree, you know, the Windows folks are not necessarily thinking about you when they're building their products right now.
I understand. But, you know, it's not just Microsoft. It's Android, too, because I can't click on an RSS feed or an iTunes link in Android and subscribe to a show just as slick as I just did on that iPad. So
I think there's a reason for that. I mean, obviously, Apple... has been able to draw people to their various devices with this abundance of free content. And because of that, they want to make it as easy as possible and help them continue to market and drive people to their various devices, whether it's a phone or tablet or computer like you have there. They see a huge value in that, and rightly so, I think. And they've done very successfully in that marketplace. I think until, you know, and not to knock on Android or Microsoft, but I don't think there's that appeal for them yet. And maybe there should be. Maybe it's a very difficult thing to grow the same way Apple has grown. Either way, I don't think that appeal is there right now. And again, I don't want to say how easy the solution is for them. If they had the most bitchin' software or whatever way to get podcasts, I'm not sure how much they would take away from Apple or not. But it's just something to consider.
It would, and my point is, it's just going to help grow the audience,
right? Right.
And
well, I agree that that's the bigger agenda. But you know, to kind of write off of what Mike's saying, I mean, from what I see from an internal perspective of why this stuff isn't happening is because the company doesn't value user generated content as highly as they value kind of major media, major studio content. And that's unfortunately where we are today. It's not really a huge knock. So Todd, if you just want to drop that in the mail, we're all set.
No, what's that referencing is Microsoft is following the cash. They don't care about new media.
That's exactly what they're doing. But, you know, I guess at the at the end of the day, and I hate to use that term, but they need to build products. And this is my own personal opinion. They need to build products that people want to use and give them what they want. And as you know, podcasts today are what 30% of the online users use podcasts. I think the truth of the matter is if it was over 50, they'd probably give it a lot more attention. That's my honest opinion.
You know, I haven't had much experience with Android, but the good folks over at LG sent me an Optimus G to play with. And so, for you know, the first thing I do, right, I load our apps, I load a podcasting app. And so, you know, because I just want to see what the experience is. And, you know, I had not had much experience with Android. I mean, you know, got an iPhone sitting over here on the cabinet, and very pleasant, very good experience. Not hard at all to get started. Something I could describe in, you know, 60 seconds on my show on how to find the show on Android and how to get subscribed to it. You know, and maybe it's the same with Windows 8, I mean, Windows Phone 8. Maybe I can do that with those mobile folks. But I think, you know, if you're going to be on Windows, if you're a content creator, I think the app is more important on the Windows phone than it is on the iPhone, because, you know, we see that people are consuming media real easy. They're able to get to it on the iPhone. There's no issue. So those folks that do have Windows phone, we just need to make it easier for them. And building some apps, because I don't think Microsoft's going to do it. So, you know, I've got an initiative internally to make it easier for folks to subscribe to stuff on Windows Phone. And some of our guys over at F5 Live are working on an actual podcasting app as well that's in the chop chain for Windows 8. So, you know, there's some stuff coming, and we're going to make it easier. But, you know, we still, irregardless of all this talk, we still see most people are, but what are they doing? They're getting in their browsers and they're loading geekandcentral.com and they're clicking play on the website. It's, you know, it's still 40% of the audience is just coming to the website via a browser and playing the show.
Yeah, wow. It does make sense that you have the capability to click on that subscribe link right on the website on your iPad or your Slate device, and it launches the internal or an app basically that subscribes you. I think that's a great tie-in to how people are using podcasts today. I mean, it's really kind of surprising to me how many people are using just a browser to actually get to this content. I mean, it's an interesting kind of thing if you think about how apps are starting to take over the world, right? How the browser and the web is still the dominant area, I would say, of how people are getting access to this stuff.
It's less than 2%, Rob. They're using apps to listen to shows. They're not listening to, you know, like you said, a show like Adam's is maybe different.
I was about to say, yeah.
You know, but for Todd's show and for the majority of shows that are out there, they're not using the app to get to it. They're going to the website. They're playing it on the website.
Yep.
You know, so... Exactly. You know, for some, I think there is a place and a time and a place. I think it's purely, you know, a lot of it should be audience size driven, you know, because, you know, if you think about it, if a show has, you know, this show here is actually doing very well. Geek News Central does very well from a subscriber standpoint. If I'm going to, okay, so for an Adam show, you know, let's just throw a number out there. And I'm not saying these are what Adam's numbers are, but let's say it's 250,000 people that listen to every one of his episodes. And let's say that 10% of his audience listens via a device. That's, you know, that's 25,000. Or let's say it's even 1%. That's 2,500, which I'm sure it's much higher. But if you take my show, you know, then the numbers, the dynamics change. If you're looking at 10%, then you're looking at 12,500 people that are going to use the app. Or 1%, it's 1,250 per episode. So the question is it worth the $3,000 to $4,000 to $5,000 to have a real nice app built, maintained for 1% of your audience to listen to your podcast? Well, maybe, you know, from a long-term standpoint, maybe, but for most folks, I don't think so. But
well, plus Todd, I think certain genres of podcasts are going to lean more on the browser than an app as well. I mean, so if you have like a sewing show or something like that, that's going to be probably 90% or more in browser play, I would think.
Well, audio is still king, no matter what. Audio still is like, you know, 80 to 90% of the consumption is audio, even if the folks are doing video. You know, why does Adam not put a video podcast out?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. I think the most important thing to look at it is besides the vertical or the type of content is the product, is an audio product or video product. And I think that makes sense that you see a lot of traffic on your website proper, whether it is for the audio or video. Whereas we're delivering – literally the mandate from Adam is consider this a radio show. Yeah. This is his old radio show, and he wants people to listen like it's a radio show, whether it's in the subway on their commute to work or in the gym while they're working, whatever it is. And that's when he talks about it and when he convinces people to consume it that way, they do. And that's when they need the app or an easy way to use it, whether it's an app or built in to those devices on their mobile devices.
Now, one thing that I have a challenge here with, and it's something that I have to be very careful of, and let me show you guys over here in a different camera view. You know, Audition's running and recording the audio portion of this show. So today, you know, during the show so far, what did I do? I held up some cash, right? And I was waving it in the camera when I was making fun of Microsoft just going after money. Well, did I describe that well enough so that the listening audience can figure out what the hell I'm just talking about? What was he talking about? Did I lose them right there by not, you know, keeping that theater of the mind open? So I think that's one of the challenges that even I have of doing a video is I still have to remember, okay, the large majority of people that are going to be listening, not watching.
So it's really, really important if you're doing a lot of visuals to verbally describe those visuals, yeah. I think. And that's exactly what you did. You said that you were waving cash in my face. Right. So that helps the audience ride through that, right? So and, you that's
know,
the key.
You know, and here I've got a shrink wrap. I've spent my $59 and I have the Windows 8.
Well, thank you, Todd.
I actually did it twice, Rob, but you know something? It's still in the shrink wrap, okay? So it hasn't been loaded on the... It hasn't been... Yeah, that helps pay your salary for a little while, I know. So
but
for,
Todd,
that's an hour of your salary.
But Todd, we don't care about that as long as you actually just bought it.
That's right. Like I said, I paid for 2 hours of your salary, Rob. So I guess, you know, getting back to, I think the true thing is we got to continue to build the audience. And I think with, you know, Mike said with set-top boxes and, you know, we're tracking. I asked Angelo, okay, how many user agents are we seeing? And he kind of laughed. He's like, I'm seeing like 500 user agents. And I'm like, so that means there's 500 user agents, variety of different, and some of the device, iPhone 5, 4S, 4G, you know, all the different iPhone varieties, all the different Android varieties, all the different versions. So that's, you know, that adds up. Each one of those is its own user agent, quote unquote. And then you have apps that give user agents. So basically you're tracking what is being coming in to consume content. But if you then categorize that down and say, okay, these five user agents belong to the iPhone, and these six belong to the iPad, and these 10 belong to the Android. When you narrow that all down and do the math, it's about 120, 125 device types that are consuming this media. So what that tells me is that folks better not be focused just on this. You know, they better be focused on all of the above and reminding their audience that they can listen on anything. Because people are consuming it on everything. So
right. And I think that's where companies like, you know, even if as you were talking about Microsoft earlier, if they don't have a built-in product to make it easy to listen on anything, the market tends to fill that void. Maybe not as quickly as it should, but companies like Stitcher, you guys developing your own stuff, and eventually even expands it into, like I say, cars or something. Stitcher being put in various car manufacturers.
You know, and I think what Stitcher is doing is good, but, you know, what drives me crazy about Stitcher is it's a closed ecosystem. What goes in is stuck in their system. They recompile your video or audio or video or your audio, and then you have to go to their site to get your stats. And what does that do? It's, for me, in my business. I get numbers because it's a Sarbanes-Oxley thing. If I needed to get audited, if my advertiser wants to come in and audit me, I'm screwed because I can't get access to the raw data at Stitcher. So I just wish people would share right. a little more openly and be able to allow, you know, and it gets the individual podcaster, it really doesn't matter. Say, this is what it is, and I'm looking at it from a business perspective. But, you know, Stitcher's done good. You know, if you look on my website, something that we do, you know, I try to make it real easy. There's people sitting in cubicles at work, and what do I have? I've got a stream that's running 24/7 with my programs in a loop. Would I listen to it that way? No, but 10,000 people listen to that stream every week because, one, they're maybe not able to download something at work, but they can play a radio type stream. So, you know, there's, again, it's just trying to get stuff out there in any way you possibly can. So,
by the way, I fully sympathize on the Stitcher thing. It was certainly a headache for us for a little while, and I could not get that more. So, yeah.
But, you know, they're doing good things over there. I don't want to degrade it all. They've brought a lot of people to the platform. You know, we've gotten plenty of listens, and really in the end, that's what counts. I don't care where they come from, as long as they get access to it. In 2005, when I wrote my book on podcasting, my dream at that time, and I think we're doggone close, is to be able to get up in the morning, start my stream, whether it be on my computer or TV, listening to a show, and I hit the shower, put my phone in my pocket, walk to the car, and pick up where I left off. And it's just like listening to the radio. What do you do when you listen to radio in your house? You got it tuned to your favorite radio station. You get in your car, you want to hear that content continue. So for us, the ability to be able to move from home to the vehicle or to the train or to the bus and be able to pick up right where we left off is a critical thing. But now that devices are a lot better and you've got them plugged into playback units and stuff, you can just take your phone and your phone might be the driver of your entertainment system in your home. You know, I'm absolutely in love with the Sonos. You guys familiar with their stuff?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
Sonos?
Yeah, Sonos. So all my, you know, every room in my house has a Sonos speaker, and my kids can, you know, load the Sonos app and they can play music off the home server right in their room. They can jam out, and then I can, if I'm in the office, I can play what I want. And, for me, it's been fantastic, and because we just use a device to access the, to play the music in the house, and the traditional hi-fi system doesn't exist anymore for most people.
Right. Right.
So, all right. Let me switch gears here a little bit. Unless you guys got anything to add to this? You know, we could have this debate every week, Rob.
And we almost always do. Yeah, I just wanted to mention, I've been thinking a lot about the whole aspect of the younger generation, whether or not they're going to come along with the whole audio thing, the whole audio podcasting with radio. It seems like that the world is so wrapped up right now, at least in the younger generation, with short-form video, that I just wonder if we're like 5 years out, or something like that, that we're going to see a fall off in consumption of audio content because everybody's so geared up because of YouTube and the YouTube kind of generation to consume short form video as the primary kind of medium. I would just kind of throw it out and get your guys' response to that.
My opinion is we've been at this 8 years and my demographic numbers haven't changed very much. You know, we know that people started to come on listening to new media at about 25. Mm-hmm. Largely the 18 to 25 audience is non-existent. It's just mini amount of people that listen from 18 to 25, but from 25 to 55 or 65, you know, it ramps up, and then, you know, 60 and older, it drops off. So that window hasn't changed very much. And what I think it is your 25 year olds grow up and they get a kid, or they have, mm-hmm. you know, need to, you know, they're commuting. They're no longer not so much playtime anymore, and it's work time. I think their tastes change. I think it's just I think they're going to grow into it.
Besides that, I think it's worth, instead of just looking at the demographics, I think it's worth looking at the producers as well. I think they don't dictate what people watch. I mean, in a certain way they do, but they can't force people to watch, but they get stuck in their head that, hey, if we have short form, it's more likely to go viral.
Right.
And it's cheaper to produce, and we can do a shotgun effect and produce lots of different cool things instead of a half an hour, an hour program of some sort. So I think especially the past probably 2, maybe 3 years, we've seen an explosion, and not necessarily in the audio world, probably more so in the video world, like the YouTube, like you say, of even high quality producers creating a lot of short form content, just because that in certain ecosystems, again, like YouTube, it does very well, but it doesn't necessarily grow the entire online video industry. It just might work, and sometimes it doesn't even work there. It's sometimes, hey, they should have just done something else entirely. But I think looking at the producers is just as important as looking at the demographics.
So do you think then that as time goes on, as those producers get into their 30s or early 40s, do you think they are going to continue to focus on short form? Are they going to stay as hip as they were when they were 22, 23?
I don't think so. And I don't think it's them trying to be hip. I think it's them reading Adweek or something and seeing, oh, short form, it's there's more eyeballs there. There's more ears for us to pitch to. If we talk to this content creator at YouTube or so on, we can create this short form. I think it's just a changing trends. I think we'll see more long form and separate of the, because this is sort of a news type of show, but you'll see more original programming on the Netflixes and the Hulus, and you already hear about it coming out in the next few years. And you'll see more value to, or they will, the producers and their cohorts, the people that help them back it, will see more value in that programming and see less value in this shotgun effect of lots of short form things that don't necessarily take off. I think it's just changing trends.
Yeah, I think he's onto something there, Rob. I think he's right. I mean, I've never thought about it from that perspective too.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about the whole producer side too, and how, you know, as people that come from that generation start making content, that it's going to be appealing to that same generation moving through the line. So I think that's a really good point, Mike.
Well, and I hope they come. If they don't, I'm my company's done. Or we'll have to laterally move and change. It's been an interesting time, and you know, I talked with it's okay. So I've got a friend in New York, and he works at a very, very big agency. Talking to him on the phone the other day, and I'm like, you know, and I don't do any advertising business with him. So I'm asking him, hey, what's going on in space? He's like, dude, the phone's quit ringing. He says, man, it's dead. And I'm like, well, you know, what do you mean? He says, the last quarter and this has just been a struggle. He says, if the political advertising hadn't been in place, you know, we'd been laying people off. And I'm like, so what's going on now? He says, it's complete hiring freeze. You know, everything is just, you know, it's just dead. And I think, okay. And I said, well, what's driving it? And they don't know. So, you know, that in its own sense has got me a little bit nervous. If companies are still worried about the economy and all this other crap that's going on politically, and I don't want to get into that topic. You know, what's it mean for the advertising space? So, you know, I'm kind of on pins and needles. You know, when I have a guy tell me that the phone's quit ringing, it's just like, holy crap, you know, what's happening in the space?
So is he speaking about kind of the digital media side, or was he talking about more broadly around kind of broadcast as well?
Everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, everything. So So we'll see when it comes to New Year. And it might be too, or it might just be in a lull. You know, people are thinking about the holidays, thinking about Christmas. And, you know, and then typically it's kind of, you know, it's normally a slow time in the, you know, you don't, believe me, coming a couple of weeks, you're not going to get a media buyer on the phone. They're all going to be on the holidays for their, you know, 3 weeks, and you know, all their campaigns are locked in for January. And, but everything that we've been talking to folks about is February. We're going to launch in February. I need a proposal for February. And, you know, if February, and if all the advertising comes in for February that I've done proposals for, Mike, I'll be calling you. You'll need to get your show back up and running because I'll be able to, to sponsor it.
Todd, I wanted to throw out another question too to you guys. I've been talking to, you know, some of the larger kind of broadcast radio networks, some of the biggest ones out there, and I keep hearing this consistent kind of feedback from them that they're really kind of slow to kind of adopt podcasting as part of their core distribution model. And one of the big reasons is they keep saying that the whole talent around doing ads is it's the digital distribution side is still not part of their deals, right?
Right,
so
right.
When talent comes in to record a radio spot or something like that, the whole digital side is still not included in that. And that's one of the core reasons why, you know, a lot of these big radio networks don't support podcasts more, because they can't use the advertising over there. You know, Mike, you come from the broadcast radio side. What do you see happening out there? And do you see that trend moving? Because I felt for a long time that the future of podcasting was going to involve probably more of these broadcast radio networks doing a good job with podcasting over the long run, and then being able to monetize that just like they've been able to do on the broadcast side. But I know that they have this conflict between local and national that they have a difficult time handling. But yeah, I know I've kind of thrown out a couple of ideas here. So what do you guys think?
I when it comes to those major networks, I think one of the biggest problems, and it seems so silly because I think all certainly three of us and probably most of your audience watching or listening knows how to keep costs down when it comes to producing their podcast. And it's very simple, and you can come up with any different way to put it out there and find a cheap CDN or find a bargain, whatever it is. I think when it comes to these big companies, they have to do a global solution that ends up being much more expensive than it should be. And I think, so before you get into the talent deals and all that other stuff, I think they have to consider, is there an appetite there to absorb this cost of development? And then beyond that, what's the day-to-day cost of running this and training, you know, dudes in Ohio and various parts of the country in using the solution? And then you start to wonder, after all that, what's the audience going to be for those things? Is that guy in Ohio going to do a good job at getting enough eyeballs or ears to make it a profitable? And I think when they look at it like that, it's hard for them to swallow the costs. I think they're good at getting those ears in the local markets, but they don't necessarily want to try to monetize those nationally. I think they've tried with various major market talent like Adam Carolla. They actually had CBS had a deal with him for a short while, and it just, for whatever reason, it didn't work for them. Like I think they're not used to selling digital national sort of endeavors like they do national radio endeavors. And so I think there's just a lot of problems between engineering, biz dev, sales, and then also the talent deals. I think it's a lot to overcome for them. But I do think that the future does lie with them a little bit. I think eventually they do need to co-opt talent and help distribute it in a big way.
On what I see on my side, and this has been the case from the beginning, and it's actually I've seen a small change, is that when you call an agency, you've got, and matter of fact, I use a database. I have pay a big subscription fee every year for a database that gives me access to anyone that basically spends more than $1 million a year. And I put the company name in, it spits out the people, the main folks at that company. And then it shows me the agency, and I can click on that and it shows me agency leads. And basically agencies are broken down by print, television, and digital. Very few national agencies have a radio division. So those that do are pretty much radio only. They do just radio. So I think the challenge that I find, and it's, Rob, it's getting back to your point, the money pots, there's a cash pot for TV, there's a cash pot for print, there's a cash pot for digital, and that's like YouTube or whatever, and then there's this cash pot for radio that some companies have that goes for a completely different buyer. Those two people are completely disconnected. So this pot doesn't want to give that pot money to, you know what I mean? It's a cash thing, and budget, more of a budget issue. So recently I've been reaching out to the radio buyers, and I've been specifically going after media companies that do radio. So if you hear a radio ad, and first thing I do is I'm looking the company up in my database, and I'm like, who's your radio buyer? And I have to dig, and sometimes I have to call the company and say, who are you doing your radio buy through? And it's some quirky media shop that I've never heard of that's not even in the database, and I get through their juggernaut of telephone calls to get to the right guy or gal, and then you have to sell, try to get it to cross over to the digital part. And it is a pain in the butt. So part of what it is, there's just this disconnect. And I hate to say it, the podcast stuff is digital, but it's in this gray area. It's closer to radio than it is to the digital buy. So the digital buyers think the radio people should do it, and the radio people think the digital buyers should do it. So no one in the agency side they're taking ownership of it. And I have to laugh. Because as soon as someone finally figures this out, and it, you know, we've been trying to educate, but as soon as someone figures out, here's this market untapped, these 45 million people that are largely being untapped each month that are listening to this media, I think so much money will roll in, we won't be able to spend it all. But the problem is these people got to figure it out. They got to figure out who owns it and where the budget's going to be. And, you know, you think about what they, you know, one or two Super Bowl ads would do incredible amount of impact. We could sell a huge amount of inventory. I've got an ad proposal in to a company that if it goes in February, it will be the largest podcasting advertising buy ever done. If they actually sign the contract, it will be, you know, basically the ad agencies are going to sit up and say, what did they just do? it'll make Ad Age and everybody. I guarantee it will. I worked on the proposal for 6 weeks. So that, if that gives you any indication, I normally work 8 hours on an RFP. So I think it's just a matter of those two people being able to talk to each other and figure out who's supposed to be funding this and who's supposed to be paying the advertising bill in this space.
A big part of what you're talking about, I mean, I agree with that first and foremost, but a big part of the problem that you're seeing, besides the agencies not wanting to shift the money from this to this over here, is just pure eyeballs and ears. And yeah, while they're there in the podcasting space, enough of them are, it's more work to get that, you know, 100 million type of people that you get from the Super Bowl. Right. So to get somebody like the Coca-Colas of the world or the Budweisers of the world with the biggest advertising, you need to make it much easier for them to say, all right, how many millions and millions of people are we getting with this single spot?
That's right.
And that's where podcasting needs to go.
And they're not used to writing checks for millions of dollars, not hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. And it's true. You got a guy that, and plus you got this guy that's got a budget, and his job is to spend it. And does he want to spend the headache of the reporting and everything that goes along with the, you know, getting the demographics on where they could just buy national? It's a lot easier to buy national. And I hate to say they don't have to be too smart to buy national.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's easy too. At the end of the day, he still looks like a winner when he buys those spots on broadcast. When if he did more work and got, he would see more conversion if he did all this podcasting stuff. But it is, like you say, so much more work and headache for him that he's never going to do that.
Yeah, and he's got to sell that to his boss as a justified use of those funds, as opposed to just buying a big ad on ABC or NBC or across all the cable channels, which is a lot easier to buy, right? That's like probably one or two phone calls, where buying across the podcasting industry is probably calling probably 10 or 15 people to get probably 30% of the market. You know, it's a tough thing.
You know, when we put this deal together, I put 2,400 shows on the buy. So how do you think, you know, me contacting 2,400 podcasts and saying, hey, here's the deal that's coming. I need to count you. Are you in? Are you out? And here's, you know, I'm not giving you the full details. Here's just the kind of the outline of what this is going to be. You know how hard that was? You know, so it, you know,
it's kind of like corralling cats.
Yeah. And, you know, and if this deal goes through, I got to hire three people to manage those cats, you know, but, you know, it'll be one of those type of things, and it'll be a huge undertaking. But, you know, we're really ready for the challenge, and we hope that the company comes in with the cashola, because if they do, we are going to, it will set the world on fire from the podcasting space. We will be very, we hope, change the actual, this discussion will go away overnight.
So Todd, are you adding a lot of shows to your buy network? I mean, are you thinking that you're the largest aggregator right now of podcasts into ad buys these days? Or?
I know I am. You know, Libsyn's doing some stuff, but I know that we're selling the most shows. I have no doubt in my mind. Do we have them all? No, but am I reaching out to every independent network? Absolutely. You know, when I, and they may not be listed on our network, but I have the authority at least to negotiate and present an ad deal. And I can go back and, you know, I'll go back to those leads in those networks and say, hey, here's what we got for you. Does this make sense? And, so on the paper, they may not be on my site, but they're, I bet you, you know, if you search around the internet and you go someplace and you look at a URL and you see stats.rawvoice.com in the, download link, you can go, that may, you know, set the tone. And, you know, and again, we're not the only game in town. You know, you've got the folks out at Revision 3 are doing great stuff. Twit's doing great stuff. You know, it's, and we're not it by far. But Todd,
should we be trying to pull these things together more? I mean, you think that, if we had, let's say we had half of all the podcasts all on one network that goes into a big agency in New York and says and drops 30 million people as a potential audience to them on the table into these demographic segments, that we can get these agencies' attention?
I think I can. Well, here's the deal. I can't go into an agency and say I'm going to sell you 40 or 30 million people because they have demographic requirements. They're going to say, I want to reach this and this, this and this, and this and this. And once I punch
it's more targeted, right?
Yeah. And once I punch that in, and I can target, unlike TV, which is, you know, just shotgun effect. But I can, you know, and then when I get done, I say, okay, here's the 500 shows that meet your demographic. Of those 500 shows, I'm going to recommend 380 of them. And those 380 have a reach of X. And here's what the bill's going to be. And that's a lot of work. That's, and again, this going back to the same thing we talked about before. They're just write a check to ABC, you know, and it's an all inclusive. It's a percentage. And I'd like to be able to do these big mass buys. But anytime you talk to digital guys, it's all about targeting that specific demographic they're looking at. And it gets to.
Well, I think that, you know, even on the broadcast side, the advertisers still target, right? Because certain shows that they want to advertise on have different demographics. So they're already still doing some of that. It's just, you know, is it on the scale of 30,000 podcasts versus, you know, 10 different TV shows?
Yeah. And then, you know, and it's, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that goes into it. I don't know. Is there an answer? I don't know if there's a complete answer at this point, but we'll see. I'm confident that things are going to continue to, you know, we had a great year last year. And, you know, quarter four is a little slow, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't know. Time will tell.
Yeah. And you see, by the way, just when you talk about sales coming and going, you see that every single year. You see the ebb and flow or every other year or whatever it is. I've seen horrific slumps and I've seen the next year being a great sale. So it's just a part of the business, as it were.
Someone's asking about Andrew Azarzine at Guys from Queen. You know, I don't know if I have their, I don't know if I know what their numbers are.
Whose numbers? So, I missed what you said.
Yeah, someone's asking in the chat room about a specific network.
GFQ network?
GFC. Or GFQ, yeah. GFQ.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're doing good stuff out there, too. So, all right, let me, this is going to turn into the podcasting show, not the Saturday Morning Tech Show. But so the audience, I have to warn the audience in the show notes. But I do want to take a few minutes and talk about some stuff I'm seeing. I'll talk about Anonymous taking down 650 Israeli sites. They wiped the databases, leaked the emails. So it looks like Anonymous is sided with Hamas and have decided that they're going to go after Israeli sites. You know, what do you think? Is this a whole new level for Anonymous or more of the same?
I think it's more of the same. I think they're going to do what they think is what they want to do. And I guess they feel like the Hamas side is the right side of this issue.
Yeah, I think the same thing is the same thing we've seen before from Anonymous when they attack, you know, military sites of America. I think it's more of the same. I agree with that.
It is interesting that they went after, and it didn't matter if it was government sites or anything with a, I don't know what the extension is, .it or .is, but they went after a bunch of them. And .il is what the Israel.com is, or the country domain. So kind of an interesting move on their part. Hey, one of our tech podcasters, Richard Hayes over at windowobserver.com, is talking about what's been going on with some stuff in Twitter and Twittero. And Rob, you probably are very familiar with this because this is a very popular Windows Twitter app, but Twitter's completely slammed the door on Twittero and refusing to offer an exemption beyond 100,000 user token limit. And, you know, is Twitter just like spitting in people's faces now, or what is their deal?
Well, it shouldn't be a surprise. They've been pulling back on their public APIs for a long time. They've been warning the community that they're going to do that. They're taking back their business. And I think that they have big plans for what they're trying to do, but they're gonna hurt a lot of people and alienate a lot of people along the way. That's kind of my comment about it.
Their response was, "Thank you for reaching out to get clarification on our developer policies. As you know, we discourage developers from building apps that replicate our core user experience. We know that there are developers that want to take their passion for Twitter and ecosystem to unique understand." Underserved situations. As such, we built some flexibility in our policy with regard to user tokens, which went into effect in September 2012. Unfortunately, it does not appear that your service addresses an area that our current or future products do not already serve. As such, it does not qualify for an exemption. Is there an actual Twitter app on Windows 8 already?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure, actually.
Huh. Well,
there may not be. I'm not sure.
So what they're going to do is they're going to lay a sticker price on this thing that'll probably be $10 or $15, and that's how they're going to re-release it and make everyone upgrade. And if you don't upgrade, you're not going to get going to have to pay to play.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't read all of. I wish I had now. An article comparing a Twitter to MySpace. Now, MySpace used to drive a ton of traffic via their embeds to short form content stuff like YouTube, and then they very quickly shuttered off and closed off that they much like Twitter is with the APIs access and accessibility, and it sort of led to the death or at least the pivot of MySpace. And it seems like an interesting comparison of not letting anyone and everyone access Twitter like they used to, and it becoming slightly more closed off, but a very different product. I don't know when they become more closed off, if it's still just as accessible to you and I as it ever was, but we'll see.
You know, speaking of MySpace, the folks over there are trying to pump new life into that beast. So they're rolling out a new site and hopes to rise from the ashes and back into prominence. There's a couple of brothers that are working on the site right now. And I haven't been over and seen what they're doing. I have to go over. You know, some of the, if I looked at some of the their video that's on this particular article over at thenextweb.com, and I'm going to tell you, some of their the stuff is pretty slick. And it's if you watch the video from a graphics design artistic look, it is, man, it's looking really, really impressive. And of course, these are all, you know, profiles that have been gussied up by, you know, graphic developers and stuff, but we'll see what MySpace does.
By the way, but besides just looking slick, and I agree completely, it does look pretty cool. I think that the next major move, something that they've been working on for a while, is if they can get a decent amount of talent. I think specifically in the music space, which is what they've been working on for a while, and I think they might be able to. I think they can become an interesting platform to see some cool stuff in the very near future.
You know,
Do you guys think that they can capture some mind share back again? That's the part that makes me a little kind of unsure about whether we're going to see MySpace actually come back and be a hot thing again, as people have moved on to other things. There's not a lot of precedent for things like this coming back. So I'm just curious, what do you
In my mind, I could see that happening if someone like myself, I would never use MySpace again the way I did however many years ago. But if they can get people like me and people my age to consider it no longer a social media platform like a Facebook or like what it used to be, but just a portal for, hey, here's a really cool thing happening tonight that you can only see here at MySpace, and it's live or it's exclusive or whatever. I think if they can do that, then yeah, they could be successful.
And I'm looking at it. I'm, you know, thinking about the demo. I always revert back to the demo. I don't know why I come home to mom every time for the demographics, but it looks to me like they're trying to reach that third, definitely hit that 30 and under crowd. It's that slick. You know, it's really nice, and I think it's going to appeal to that generation that is not so. You know, Rob, when we started using the web, man, it was all straight lines.
There was a few curves in there, it was a little unusual.
No, it was not straight lines. I mean, it was curves in there. There might have been some beveled edges later, but it was awful boxy like Facebook. And so I think that's where MySpace is. It's kind of curvy, I guess. You know, and I think I really do. I think their design is fantastic. You know, I think they've hired whoever they've done their graphic stuff on that site has done some cool stuff. So it definitely has that a certain level of sex appeal. Now, speaking of a certain level of sex appeal, Rob, we got to come back to mama here. Paul Thurrott's super site for Windows is reporting Windows 8 sales well below projections. Plenty of blame to go around. So what's the rumor mill at Microsoft about the departure of this big VP that left? What's your personal opinion?
What's my personal opinion? Well, that's like three topics right there all in a row. I'm not quite sure which one to get started with. I think that the Windows 8 thing, I think is, I'll just start off with that. It's an interesting upgrade. I think I can't say honestly that I'm necessarily surprised that there's I don't know that this has been confirmed, and I don't have any inside information on how sales are going with Windows 8, but just my own experience with it, I can see where there would be some hesitation on the part of people upgrading and using this operating system. So I think it's a big, bold move for the company to have put this out. It is such a departure from what they have been known for and what the experience has been up to this point. I think it's unrealistic to think that there wouldn't be some pain here as part of this transition. And I think it's early for this product. I don't necessarily agree 100% with the broader strategy of what was done here, but I totally understand where it's coming from. So I think time will tell with this product. I think it's going to evolve, and this like I said, this isn't the end of the road for Windows and the operating system. This is kind of a new beginning. So where it goes from here is going to have a little bit of a different, I think, course now with the departure of Steven Sinofsky. I don't necessarily disagree with a lot of the comments that have said about the whole situation. I do have some inside knowledge on things, but I'm not.
Be careful.
I don't know for sure why he left in reality, but I think, you know, change is sometimes good, and you know, Microsoft is very much in the mindset of ship it and move on, and that could be a big part of this. It was this big build up, and he's done this big project, and it's just time for him to move on to something else. So I'm not, like I said, I don't really have any inside information about what was going on there.
You know, I had Brian, our creative director at Raw Voice. We had our Tuesday conference call every Tuesday night. We meet as a team, and so you know, we're kind of talking about Windows 8, talking about the podcasting impacts and stuff. And Brian said, "I loaded it." My initial reaction was, "You did?" And you know, he's my creative guy, and internally, my clock is like, I can't believe he loaded it. I thought he would have been the last. And then within about 15 seconds, my brain engaged and says, well, you know, yeah, Knucklehead, his design style is kind of a lot like Microsoft. So, yeah, I understand why he upgraded. So he's actually loving the new design. So, you know, you got one convert there for sure. Angela and I are both probably going to do the deed this weekend and upgrade, but, and we'll have probably some more insight then. Yeah, I've been playing with the RT, and I guess my only comment about it is it underperforms. I'm not, it's not as responsive as the iPad. So one thing they could have done in the Windows RT is they could have put in a better processor. It just seems a little sluggish, and to me that is that's a knife in the chest. No one wants to be sluggy anymore in any type of stuff that they're using, but I guess the manufacturers are going to start coming out with lots of more devices and hardware, and we'll see how popular. But it's definitely a two monitor, in my opinion. It's a two monitor operating system. I don't think you're going to get as good of a experience with a single monitor. Have you played with, are you a Mac or are you a Windows guy, Mike?
I'd say equal parts both. And the desktop I'm on right here happens to be a PC, but I've got, you know, various ones of each side scattered throughout the house. I don't have the RT. I've only got the iPad here. And I agree, like it for a tablet to be successful, it needs to be as snappy as possible. It can't be sluggish at all. But I'm worried about upgrading to Windows 8. I actually have this desktop is touch enabled, and I'm still debating whether or not I want to do it anytime soon. The same with my work PC, but that is a dual screen. I could see it working better at work.
Here's the thing about touch screens in a desktop.
Yep.
But this is what I can do with my iPad. I can wipe it on my shirt and clean the screen.
I don't want it. And that's the entire. No one's actually touched this desktop for that exact reason. Yeah.
Okay.
Todd, you just kind of lean forward, right?
And I can do the. Oh, you do it that way, Rob. You clean the screen up with. So, you know, my background is, you know, before I became a podcaster, new media guy, and I was active duty in the military. I spent 24 years in the Navy, and we had touch screens on everything. And I'm going to tell you, it drives you, if the light is just right, If the light is just right, all you see is this mass of fingerprints on the screen. It sucks. So next thing you're up, psh, 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 and you're wiping the screen, and that's good for an hour until you've touched it 10 times, and then you want to edit a photo, and there's a fingerprint in the middle of your photo. You're like, what's that line? And you got to clean. I tell you, the folks that make you want to make a good stock investment, here's your stock tip of the day, buy into companies that have screen cleaning products because they're going to sell very well.
Plus, I also noticed I went into a Best Buy the other day, and I was looking around. I was like going, you know, one thing I could do is I could just add a touchscreen monitor to my current PC. And I walk into the store, and there's only one monitor that you can buy in there that is a touchscreen that you can just add on to your computer or anything like that. And it was like $500 for like a 22-inch screen.
So probably maybe at CES we're gonna, you know, the price breaking point for consumers is $199. That's what it was last year. Now we'll see what the breaking point is at CES this year. What we do, Mike, is when we go to CES, we find out within the first day what the break point is, because the manufacturers all will agree, what's going to be the retail on this? $299. What's the retail going to be? $299. And by the end of the day, what was the break point? Never says $299. Last year, break point was $199. So we also do a little internal poll before we go to the show. What do you think the break point's going to be? And my bet this year is $249. That's the break point I'm predicting for CES 2013. So Rob, what it has to be, it has to be $249, or no one's going to buy it.
It does. For me, it's got to be a 24-inch flat screen to replace what I have right in front of me right now. And I'll be reaching for it. You know, I'll be putting my finger right on that screen and tossing those tiles to one side and the other. No question. I'm not really worried about upgrading to Windows 8. I think I'm definitely going to do it. I haven't done it yet on my home computer here yet, but I have been using Windows 8 on my laptop at work, and it's, I don't think it's that big of a shift, but it is a touch first experience, and I think using it with a keyboard and mouse is not taking advantage of what was designed there, and that's the key thing for me.
Well, one thing's for sure, the exercise people, if they want to get people to, you know, lose a little bit of trim around the edges, they could come up with a new game that makes you, you know, touch this, you know.
That's right. I can actually move beyond just pushing a little mouse around.
Yeah, a little exercise game, and that might actually do good for less carpal tunnel injuries. So
that's true. That's true.
Boy, got to think about the positive along with all
that's
the
right.
other. Yeah.
Go positive.
All right. Last couple of things we're going to talk about today, because we spent so much time on new media. Amazon's losing up to $1 billion a year streaming video. You guys find that an incredible number? $1 billion?
I'm not surprised, actually.
And it basically, Netflix is saying, or that Reed Hastings is saying that, he knows how much it costs to sign these content deals,
Todd, and it's actually more than that. Each one of these companies is doing separate encoding and publishing to their own platforms. They're basically, and this flies in as a contrast to podcasting, where the content provider does all the encoding,
right?
For the digital distribution. Well, you know, each of these companies does their own ingestion, their own encoding into all sorts of various formats, and they have huge staff teams that actually do that. And there's so much duplication that's going on in the industry right now around TV and movies, it's ridiculous. At some point, they're going to have to consolidate this stuff into one encoding. That's going to cut out probably a quarter of the costs involved in publishing TV and movie content to these digital platforms. It's going to have to happen, but the problem is nobody wants to work together, and everybody's trying to draw a distinction within their platform around the whole encoding thing, and I just don't think people care. They just want it to play.
You know, this anyway, this shows
my soapbox.
This shows a prime example. I put it up in 720, 640 by 360, and 320 by 180. It goes up in three distinct flavors so that the folks that are on mobiles can watch. The people that are on their big screens can, you know, so it's kind of a mix. They can, but I have to. If I don't, it's, you know, you're going to cut people out. And
well, that and, you know, Amazon and Microsoft and Netflix, they're all doing separate encodes of the same master files from the big studios, and it's ridiculous. I launched the Zune TV store back in 2008. You know, I was in charge of the content for that, and we got our first batch of TV shows from NBC on a hard drive that a guy carried up on an airplane up to us.
Wow!
And so we had to take that hard drive in, offload all of the masters, and do complete re-encodes and publish that into our system. And it took like a week and a half. It was ridiculous. And thousands of dollars in encoding costs. So it's crazy.
It's definitely, hey, hard drive and cloud computing business is definitely good for them.
It's just crazy. Yeah,
you know, I look at my cloud computing bill every month, and you know, that's enough to. There's an employee.
Yeah,
you know, you're like, my God, it's crazy. Google and Dish are holding talks to launch a wireless service. So apparently, Dish and Google are hooking up, and they are going to attempt to become the first mobile carrier in the United States next year. So. That could be a big game changer with the Google's way of trying to shake up the marketplace. Exciting. Yeah. I think that's an exciting development.
I agree. I think it's pretty, and along with their fiber stuff, which is kind of old news at this point, although I think it finally lit up this week.
Yeah.
I like the idea. As much as Google scares about, you know, more than half of my friends about privacy concerns and Big Brother and all that stuff, I'm kind of a fan. I've used their products a long time. I think it's made my life better. I could see, even though I when it comes to mobile devices, I'm sort of stuck on Apple stuff. I could see myself being attracted to a kit and caboodle solution that Google offers at some point down the line. If this does end up taking off and getting off the ground,
you know, it takes a big company to compete with big companies. You know, that's just the way it is. And, you know, I look at my situation here in Hawaii. I have no choice. I'm locked in. I got Time Warner. Now, the local telephone company are starting to compete, but although sell me as a triple play, and I keep telling them, I don't want triple play. I just want the internet. I don't need your TV. I don't need your telephone. Bring me the internet, and then you got a new customer, and I'll write you a check for $40 or $50 or $60 or $100 a month, whatever it's going to be. You know, I just want to be able to have the ability to have some competition in the, you know, and I was talking with Angelo, and he's like, oh, I'm changing my cable provider. I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, I got the choice of five here in Columbus. I'm like, five? And I'm like, I guess there's, you know, there's no monopoly there, but, you know, definitely a lack of a competition here. And it's, I think most people have a couple to choose from.
So are you guys worried at all about Google, you know, getting your online connection? I mean, it's a very vertical scenario, right? From a platform provider that has a complete suite of products that they're going to push at you. As a primary platform. I mean, my question for the whole Google Fiber is, how open is Google Fiber to other companies' technology, right? If you look at their Chromebook, you know, you can kind of see a little bit of a glimpse of where my concern comes from. So anyway, I'm just throwing that out there as well.
Rob, how open is Time Warner?
Yeah.
Well, No, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, you look at Comcast. Well, Comcast is basically, sure, they own NBC and they do control the platform, but they aren't a Google, right? They don't get involved at that level, right? I'm just a little concerned about that. You know, Mike, it sounds like you were going to say something.
Yeah, I get it. Like, I do see their ability to be able to do something there that would be concerning. But I think for a variety of reasons that they would never dare to worry. They would never dare step on that. Their idea, I think, net neutrality at the end of the day helps them more than anything. So if they were ever to take the first salvo, I think they'd be much more damaged by other companies than vice versa. Well, they could do a decent amount of damage, but at the end of the day, it's mutually assured destruction. And I think Google gets that more than anybody of if they fired a salvo, everyone else would, and the internet would become a different place entirely. I don't see that being, I'm not too worried about Google taking that first shot.
And if they did, there would be any trust stuff from the federal government over them. They're already underneath the microscope in a big way. So,
oh yeah,
that's true. We'll see. Just so you guys know, Apple now owns a patent on page turn. So every time you page turn a book or a tablet or anything, you owe them a royalty. So just be aware of that. They awarded that patent here a couple of days ago. There's also some news, space news. They feel that if they actually are able to ever build a warp drive, they think that why it may be possible to build a warp drive when you come out of warp and the location that you get into, you will actually destroy the location that you're actually going to. So they feel there's with this Alberi or whatever it is, warp drive. No, this is true news on Extreme Tech. That, you know, they go somewhere and they may just absolutely annihilate the planets at their arrival location. So so scientists are trying to wrap their head around that one.
So what's the point of going, right?
Right. And stop your peer-to-peer use now. Six Strike starts here in a few weeks. And also make sure that you're, if you are doing peer-to-peer, that you're using a VNC or a virtual VPN. What did I say? VNC. VPN. there's several of them out there that you can subscribe to that will semi help you be protected. But, you know, hey, Rob, you ever hit reply all and not instead of hiding some emails, sent emails out in that email that you didn't want other people to see, didn't do the blind carbon copy, just did a, have you ever done that?
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I've done just about anything you can do on email.
The Taliban did the same thing. The Taliban failed to BCC an email list, and they've revealed their entire PR mailing list. I just wonder if the United States Defense Department has gotten that list and now has some new orders going to some drones. You know. Yeah.
The best part of that story is the fact that they've got a PR department at the Taliban. I wonder if we're going to start getting hits from like MKBNC. Like, oh, we can do it. We'll never BCC or falsely BCC anybody.
Like, that's PR at Taliban.com? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Whatever. I don't know. But anyway, so probably the guy that sent that email, he'll end up being on YouTube with his head chopped off or something. You know, they don't just fire someone. They just shoot them, you know. Oh, well, anyway, we're long here, and I have got a CES planning meeting in 15 minutes. I need to put an agenda together for, so we're going to wrap up here real quick. Mike, where can they find you on Twitter?
Go to at Chaffee, CIO, F as in Frank, I, Chaffee on Twitter.
Very, very cool. So make sure you follow Mike there. And Rob, where can they find you these days?
Also on Twitter at Rob Greenlee with two E's. So that's the best place. And then at robgreenlee.com too.
And you can find me here at Geek News. Of course, geeknews@gmail.com is a place to send your emails on today's show. Hey, just so I should have promoted this at the beginning before people already turned off the show, but we're going to do the 24-hour podcast on December 15th, and I'm working on the agenda. And Rob, I know you're going to join in and be part of that. I'm sure we'll have some of these types of discussions that day to a whole new audience. So getting that planned out and going to punish my body one more time. My wife tells me I'm crazy. So, but
we'll you are crazy. What do you mean? 24-hour podcast.
Hey, it's, you know, it's, I got to come up with a good fundraiser yet. We got to figure out who we're going to, I'm looking for a cause this year. So if you have a suggestion on a organization that needs to raise some funds, we'll do a fundraiser along with it at the same time to a good charitable cause. But until next time, everyone, thanks for hanging out with us here on Saturday Morning Tech. Mike, thanks for hanging out, man. It was great having you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I'd love to have you back on in the future. And Rob, thanks for arranging to have Mike on the show. And next time, we'll not talk about podcasting so much, but thanks for everyone for being here. We'll see you next time. Take care and aloha.